The unemployment rate is as low as it's been in 50 years. We've created 11 million jobs, 750,000 manufacturing jobs. Our economic agenda ignited a manufacturing boom, the semiconductor boom, the battery boom, the electric vehicle boom. We're making things in America again in every part of America, cities large and small.
That's a lot of boom boom, Mr. President. Too bad about those documents, though, huh?
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's what the media tells me. Might as well leave at this point.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair.
Just as bad as
and
Trump.
I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs.
In every regard.
Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Yes, I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is the broadcast. That's heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA, 98.7 in Santa Barbara, 93.7 in San Diego, 99.5 FM in Ridgecrest and China Lake, California. Also in California, in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI and Round Mountains, KKRN. Up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's KSO, Eugene's KEPW. Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU, in Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, Rochester, New York's WRFZ, down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, and Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM950 KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on the internet. So the Progressive Voices Channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, Workforce Rising, No Lies Radio, Verdant Square Radio, and Detour Talk, and other fine affiliates blanketing planet Earth. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us for another thrilling edition of the Bradcast. Once again, news and context over your public airwaves, if you can imagine such a thing. Glad you could join us. It has been a while, by the way, since we've opened up the phone lines here on the Bradcast. My aim is to do so today. Desi Doyen, is my aim correct? Are the phones working today?
We are going to have an adventure in phones today, but I think they are working. They do appear to be working so far. But please join us on this adventure.
What could possibly go wrong? Given that so much has happened, frankly, since our last program last week, over the weekend and today, and even before our last program last week, particularly when it comes to the ongoing wildly dangerous game of chicken that House Republicans are now playing with the debt ceiling for the federal government. I'd particularly like to hear from y'all on this. The GOP is holding the nation and the world, which could also sink into recession or depression based on whether the U.S. government defaults on its debt payments. The GOP is holding the nation and the world hostage to its demands. The GOP is now risking, frankly, a full default on the good faith and credit of the United States government for the first time in history as they pretend to suddenly be concerned about the national debt and government spending, something Republicans did not seem to worry about in the last, last administration when they cut hundreds of billions of dollars of revenue in order to give huge tax cuts to corporations and their wealthy friends back in 2017 when they had full control of both Congress and the White House. And yet they increased spending and they decreased revenue. And now they want to pretend they're concerned about the national debt. Don't buy it. Now that there's a Democrat back in the White House and GOP control of one of the chambers of Congress, rather than a simple vote to lift the debt ceiling, lift the borrowing limit, like the 80 or so times that it has been done since the 1960s, now they want to force cuts to social spending programs like Social Security and Medicare, in some sort of deal for in exchange for doing the absolute minimum that they are required to do by the Constitution and lift the government's current silly statutory borrowing limit. Lifting the limit is needed to issue more U.S. Treasury bonds. That's the way the U.S. government borrows money, and that is needed in order to pay for the stuff that Congress and presidents of both parties have already bought or agreed to pay for with past legislation. Failing to do so, failing to lift the nation's borrowing limit, is the equivalent of eating a huge meal at a restaurant and then, frankly, running out on the bill. That's what the GOP is threatening to do here, with the full faith and credit of the U.S. government at stake. And the last time they even threatened to do so, not when the debt ceiling was raised three times without a problem under Donald Trump, but back in 2011, when the last Democratic president, Barack Obama, was in the White House and Republicans controlled Congress. The last time Republicans even threatened to potentially send the U.S. government into default, it ended up costing the nation hundreds of billions of dollars when credit rating agencies lowered the nation's AAA credit rating for the first time in history. That, of course, increased the national debt. It did not lower it, as Republicans are pretending to care about now. They aren't concerned about it in the least. They are lying to the American public for perceived political gain, if you can imagine such a thing, and they are playing with your livelihood and your economy in doing so. Anyway, the White House says they refuse to negotiate on the matter, that the debt must be raised, period, end of story, before the extraordinary measures that are currently being employed by the Treasury Department, the extraordinary measures to avoid a default right now, because they ran out of money in the borrowing authority to borrow more late last week, the Biden administration insists that the borrowing limit be raised before those extraordinary measures run out, likely sometime before June this summer, according to Treasury. Well, the White House has said repeatedly they need Congress to raise that limit, and they will not negotiate on the matter. It is not negotiable. In fact, as we noted last week, the broadcast obtained some exclusive audio from the White House negotiator revealing the administration's position on this matter in response to Speaker Kevin McCarthy and House Republicans hoping to hold the economy hostage to social program spending cuts. Here was the White House negotiator's position on that.
You get nothing. You lose. Good day, sir. I said good day.
So, okay. Pretty hard line there from the White House, it seems to me.
Yeah, but when you think about it, the fact that, you know, the Constitution itself, mm-hmm. what is it, Amendment 4 of the 14th Amendment?
Section 4 of the 14th Amendment.
Yes, that says that the credit of the United States shall not be questioned. So it seems like this is a pretty cut and dried situation to me. But of course, that has never applied, I guess, to Republicans who want to make some political gain out of causing economic distress, I guess.
Well, I will ask this. If the White House has that hardline position that you just heard, and they say that it is not negotiable, you must raise the debt limit, and Republicans are basically putting a gun to the head of the U.S. economy, and, you know, threatening to default for the first time in history, yeah, Biden and the White House can say it's not negotiable, but is it? Should it be? Should the Biden administration give in to at least certain demands by the House GOP in order to avoid this potentially cataclysmic turn of events? Millions of job layoffs, stock market crashes, recessions, depressions in the U.S. and around the globe by somehow negotiating with the Republicans? Or should they stand their ground and let Republicans crash the U.S. and world economy and be held accountable for it in 2 years if they do? Or, given the corporate media that we have, will they blame everything on the White House? on the Biden White House, of course. Anyway, that's just one of the points that I'm open to hearing your thoughts about today at 818-985-5735. If you are in our live listening area in Southern California or listening via the internets, 818-985-KPFK. Also, it's been 2 years as of last Friday since Joe Biden was sworn in as the nation's 46th president. And for my money, it's been a pretty extraordinary 2 years, with more accomplished in those 2 years by any sitting president in their first 2 years since at least Lyndon B. Johnson, in my opinion. Your mileage, however, may vary, and I would love to hear from you either way at 818-985-5735 at the 2 year mark in the president's first term. And of course, there is the ongoing drip, drip, drip of news about documents, some of them classified, from Joe Biden's 2 terms as vice president that are being found now at his various residences among his other papers from his time in office. On Saturday, as we have since learned, the Department of Justice searched Biden's Wilmington, Delaware residence from top to bottom for nearly 13 hours. They found another half dozen or so documents said to have been marked as classified, though we do not know yet at what level they were classified. The search was said to have been consensual between the Bidens and the DOJ. In other words, the Bidens said, have at it. Search everywhere. Let us know what you find and take anything that should not be in our possession. That, of course, to me, is just one of the reasons that the matter of Donald Trump's thousands of pages of stolen documents seized from his home by force by the FBI in Florida is nothing like the Biden case. That, after months of the National Archives essentially begging Donald Trump to return documents that they knew he had taken, after a legal subpoena was then issued by the Department of Justice to force Trump to turn over all of the documents, which Trump refused to do and then lied about. And finally, the seizure of those documents from Mar-a-Lago by the FBI under the authority of a federal court-approved search warrant showing probable cause that several crimes were actively underway that the FBI needed to stop by seizing those documents at Mar-a-Lago. Again, as I see it, absolutely nothing like what we have seen since Biden's attorneys discovered some misfiled classified documents among Biden's vice presidential papers, notified the National Archives and the DOJ to find out what to do, how to return them, did so the very next day after they were discovered, reportedly, and have continued to double-check Biden's various offices and residences ever since to turn over anything else that got filed almost certainly by one of his aides when he left the vice presidency, which Biden appears to have known nothing about at the time, or so they claim. Now, despite the wild, not even comparable differences in those two cases, opportunistic Republicans and ridiculous Democrats, from Dick Durbin to Joe Manchin, to name just 2 examples, have been racing to TV cameras to explain how these cases are somehow identical, how Biden's case is just like Trump's case. There's no difference at all. And that it could mean that Donald Trump can now not be charged for his clear, obvious obstruction of justice in refusing to return the documents that he knew he stole upon leaving the White House, and that he knew he was obstructing to prevent the proper authorities from getting them back. I find this argument absurd on its face, and frankly, while perhaps I'm an outlier here, you can call in at 818-985-5735 to let me know, I would argue that Biden's behavior makes an indictment of Trump more obviously necessary, or at least it should. It reveals a perfect illustration of how one is supposed to handle such a matter versus how one is absolutely not supposed to handle such a matter. Remember the old Highlights magazine that you might have read in the dentist's office? Remember their Goofus and Gallant feature, which was one of my favorites? Remember that?
Oh my gosh, yes. That was my favorite, going to the dentist. It made it worthwhile.
There you go. That is kind of what we're looking at here. Goofus took the took documents from the White House that do not belong to him, and when he got caught, he refuses to return them. Gallant, on the other hand, found that he accidentally took documents that did not belong to him, and he immediately contacted the authorities to inform them and return the documents. It's, you know, the perfect highlights Goofus and Gallant story, and yet, for some reason, Democrats, well, they're always cowardly. They'll freak out about anything. But the media, who should know better and probably does know better, but needs to prove how fair they are to all, how tough they are on all sides, is pretending that this is a crisis on par with Donald Trump. Who knows? Maybe even worse. Anyway. Please ring in on any of these topics, if you like, or any others that I do hope to hit today, or anything else you'd like to discuss or ask me about over your public airwaves at 818-985-KPFK.
I would just say that what I have seen in the corporate media coverage on the Biden documents case is that at the beginning, they'll make it sound like, hey, are these things alike? Looks like there's all kinds of aspects of it that are similar between the two. And then it's not until you get down to the 13th, 14th paragraph or later that it will show you something along the lines of, well, they're not really at all alike, but you know, they've spent most of their time talking about them as
correct.
If they are. So I think that leaves a false impression with the public, especially people that only get to see the headlines in passing.
How unlike the corporate media to leave a false impression with the public. Of course, there was also the horrific shooting over the weekend at a dance hall not far from where we are here in Los Angeles, just a few miles east of L.A. in Monterey Park. At a celebration of the Lunar New Year, when an Asian man who has since taken his own life, according to law enforcement officials, on Sunday when he killed 10, injured another 10 with a semi-automatic pistol with an extended magazine during a Chinese New Year celebration over the weekend. And sadly, we have just received word in the past couple of hours that an 11th victim has now died in this horrific shooting. The gunman's motive for the killings and another attempted massacre, allegedly by the same man, which was stopped, by the way, at a different dance hall by good guys without a gun. His motive remains unknown at this hour. The weekend massacre was the nation's fifth mass killing this month alone, according to AP's and USA Today's database on mass killings in the U.S., which finds that 2022 was one of the nation's worst years with 42 such attacks. 42 mass killings, the second highest number since the creation of the tracker in 2006, the database defines a mass killing as 4 people killed, not including the perpetrator. The Monterey Park shooting was also the deadliest attack since May 24 of last year, when 21 people were killed in an elementary school in Uvalde, Texas. My phone number is 818-985-5735. You may wish to ring in on some of my interviews last week with Chris Melody Fields Figueredo from the Ballot Initiative Strategy Center on Friday, explaining how Republicans have lost a whole bunch of popular ballot initiatives during the 2022 election cycle on everything from abortion rights to gun safety laws to legalization of marijuana and more. And so now, what are Republicans and states around the country trying to do? Well, they are making it much harder to get statewide citizen ballot measures on the ballot at all, making it more difficult to get them on the ballot in the first place and making it harder to adopt those measures into law or constitutions by raising the threshold for adopting them. For example, from 50% plus one to 60%. Ohio's gerrymandered GOP supermajority in the state legislature there is trying to do exactly that, for example, in advance of new ballot initiatives on abortion rights and, yes, redistricting and gerrymandering over the next year or two. Then there's the $1 million in legal sanctions slapped on Donald Trump and his new attorney, Alina Habba, late last week by a federal judge in South Florida, where Trump had filed a ridiculous lawsuit against Hillary Clinton, James Comey, and more than two dozen other defendants, including many of his perceived enemies at the FBI and in Congress, for what his suit described as, quote, an orchestrated, malicious conspiracy to disseminate patently false and injurious information about Donald J. Trump and his campaign, all in the hope of destroying his life, his political career, and rigging the 2016 presidential election in favor of Hillary Clinton. Yes, that's right. The one, you know, the election that he actually won against Hillary Clinton. The judge down in South Florida found the case was so absurd that he not only dismissed it with prejudice, but he spent 46 pages explaining how ridiculous it was last week, including the fact that there was no actual evidence to support any of Donald Trump's charges, and for that matter, Trump didn't even include any actual allegations of violations of law in the complaint. Anyway, we discussed the suit in detail last week, and Bradblog.com's legal analyst Ernie Canning wrote about it as well today. I recommend checking out his article on this, his take on all of this, and on Trump's years-long record of litigational grifting. But one of the most wildly amusing points from Judge Middlebrook's order last week, ordering nearly $1 million in sanctions against the in favor of the defendants, I should say, is that the single largest fee that Trump must pay as part of the sanctions is nearly $172,000 to his apparent greatest nemesis of all times, Hillary Clinton. Got questions, comments, thoughts on any or all of the above or anything else? I got more. 818-985-5735. Let me get to a quick call here or two, and I'll get to more of this news, unless you want to derail the entire show by giving me a call. 818-985-KPFK. Let me go to Jill in Long Beach. Hey, Jill, welcome to the broadcast.
Hello. Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good.
Good.
I was questioning myself something I don't understand about the Republicans not wanting to raise the debt limit.
Yeah.
Don't most people who live off Social Security and Medicare live in the red states? I remember reading that once. See, this is the thing that I don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
Their constituents are not going to be happy with them, right? I mean, if this really went through.
Right. Well, two answers there. One, I'm not sure if more people live in red states. What I do know is that red states, so-called red states, and I hate calling them red states, but I know what you're saying. So-called red states take in more money from the federal government than they give out. The states that Republicans hate, you know, like California, New York, et cetera, we all pay more money to the federal government than we actually receive back. So, yes, the spending goes more to those red states than it does to those so-called blue states. That was one thing. And the other thing is, yeah, sure, their constituents in theory would be ticked off if they actually do these things, but that presumes their constituents are actually going to hear about it. That presumes their constituents are actually going to hear real facts about it as opposed to the BS they are most likely going to hear on Fox News and in the right-wing media chum circle. They don't hear about this stuff. They don't hear the stuff you're hearing today, Jill.
Oh, I didn't. I didn't realize that. No, it's just, you know, I know my mother lived off Social Security, and I'm sure a lot of people, elderly, live off Social Security and get Medicare, and I'm sure the majority of the country doesn't want it cut.
Well, that's right. You know? Of course, no, they don't. Social Security is very obviously, and Medicare and so forth are wildly popular. But the problem is, if a check stops arriving because the government defaults, who is it, do you think, is going to get the blame for it? The people who actually stopped it, Congress, by not raising the debt limit, or are, you know, the right-wing media and the not right-wing media going to, you know, blame, well, why didn't Joe Biden do more to stop this from happening? So,
I see where it's going. Yeah.
I mean, even now, Jill, A majority of Republicans believe that Donald Trump actually won the 2020 election and that Joe Biden stole it somehow from him. A majority, a huge majority of Republicans, 2 years after the election, and zero evidence to suggest that that is possibly true. But they believe it because they listen to their own media sources who are happy to lie to them.
Yeah, that's what it is, because I never understood it. Trump didn't do anything really for anybody, mostly just the rich. So that was the thing that I never got. But thanks for answering my question. Appreciate it.
Happy to help. Thanks for the call, Jill. Greatly appreciated. 818-985-KPFK is our phone number. Hey, there was somebody on there that said I was a big stooge for...
Yes, there was a caller who had called on who had said that you were a corporatist for the Biden administration and the Democrats. And
they
she
hung
felt
up?
That you were...
She
yeah, and then she hung up right before you started taking calls. So I don't know what happened, but...
I'm sad.
You know, I
call
gave
back.
Her, told her to call back.
Please do.
Okay.
818-985-KPFK. And I'll get to more of your calls in a moment. Just breaking a few hours before airtime this afternoon. Speaking of 2020, four more Oath Keeper members were found guilty by a jury of seditious conspiracy on Monday afternoon for their part in attacking the U.S. Capitol during the Trump-incited insurrection on January 6, 2021. Even if the head of that conspiracy, I should say, Donald Trump, has yet to face any accountability for it. Now, I suspect he will. Special Counsel Jack Smith continues probing that case and Trump's stolen documents at Mar-a-Lago. But we will see. That verdict came in on Monday, just an hour or two after this one. The Arkansas man who propped his feet up on a desk in then House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's office during the U.S. Capitol riot was convicted on Monday. Remember that guy? That guy who put his feet up in Nancy Pelosi's office and he stole an envelope. Well, that guy's name was Richard Biggo Barnett, and a jury deliberated for just 2 hours on Monday before unanimously convicting him on all 8 counts in his indictment, including felony charges of civil disorder and obstruction of an official proceeding. Barnett, lounging at a desk in Pelosi's office, made him one of the most memorable figures of the riot from January 6. U.S. District Judge Christopher Cooper is scheduled to sentence Barnett on May 3. Barnett vowed to appeal his conviction, calling it an injustice. The DOJ prosecutor said the jury concluded that Barnett took a weapon into Pelosi's office, actually a tasing stick, and that, quote, "we can only imagine what would have happened if Pelosi had been there at the time." Barnett, who is 62 years old, testified last Thursday that he was just looking for a bathroom inside the Capitol when he unwittingly entered Nancy Pelosi's office. 818-985-KPFK. Let me go to Adam in San Diego. Hey, Adam, welcome to the broadcast, sir.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. What's up?
My first time hearing your program, and when I first heard it, many of these programs I lose respect for quickly, but you actually kept me listening. And so then you invited us to call, and I like how you seem to be like your own person and not left or right, which is refreshing. For the radio.
Thank you. But?
Yes, no, thank you, actually.
Okay.
It's refreshing.
Okay. But I'm waiting for a but. I feel like there's a but coming, but go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
There's a but coming. Yeah, there's a but coming.
Okay.
I'm from San Diego. Did you just ask me that?
Everyone in San Diego has a big but. Yeah, go ahead.
So, I'll just make it quick. So,
yes.
You said that Democrats are cowards. So I just wanted you to, like, elaborate on that or define coward.
Well, on which point were we talking? At that point, I think we were talking about the documents issue. They're just cowardly. They go along to get along. The media, they go in and they go on the Sunday shows. The corporate media asks them something, you know, along the lines of, "Excuse me, Dick Durbin, doesn't this discovery of documents in Joe Biden's garage mean that we can no longer charge Donald Trump for doing the exact same thing? And instead of Donald,
it wasn't exactly the same.
It was not at all. Right. That's my point. Right. And instead of Dick Durbin saying, "Well, excuse me, but these cases weren't even close. They're not even the same thing. They're nowhere near the same thing. Why would you even ask such a stupid question?" They just don't seem to have the courage to do that and to speak back to the media. And that's just one example.
So to be clear, when you said Democrats, you're referring to elected officials and not the entire Democratic constituents and part.
Correct. Yes, you are correct.
Thank you. I just wanted to confirm that because as someone who has gone out of my way as a young American to participate in the democratic process as a proud Democrat, I have taken risks that most people would not even dare to take risks. I've been arrested for doing my part many times. And I was like, is he calling me a coward?
No.
I just wanted.
No, I'm not. And I appreciate you calling in to clarify that point. No, I was talking about Democrats in office, Democrats in the media who just cannot seem to, show, the Republicans, at least they have courage. And again, Republican elected officials, they have the courage. They have the courage to go out there and absolutely lie about anything. And yet elected Democrats, are too scared to go out and tell the truth about anything. It's maddening.
As a voting Democrat, I will have to agree with you. The Democrats tend to be more passive and more not as confrontational as their counterparts.
Yeah. Well, they need to wake up because we are living in a confrontational world right now. And if they don't push back, they will get run over, it seems to me, in any event.
I kind of look at it more as like socialism or fascism. Like the Republican Party's very fascist leaning.
Yep.
And as a Democrat, I guess since I do enjoy Bernie Sanders and his Democrat socialism, sure, if they want to say I'm a socialist, but they're a fascist. And if I had to choose a direction for my country, I would choose socialism over fascism in a heartbeat.
Yeah. So. And I would add, they are not fascist leaning. They are already there. Thanks, Adam.
Thank you for your time, sir.
I appreciate the call, brother. Stay in touch. Thank you, sir. 818-985-KPFK. A lot of folks want to get in here, and that is a good thing. Why don't we take a quick break, and we will come back with more of your calls. I've got some more news items. 818-985-KPFK. I'm Brad Friedman, and you are listening to The Bradcast.
What the public hears on the public airwaves matters. At The Bradcast, we do our best to bring you accurate news and analysis on the issues that actually matter, and we do it all independently without corporate or political influence. But we can't do it without you, now more than ever. Please help us stay on your public airwaves by going to bradblog.com/donate to help keep us going. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. We are taking your calls on anything and everything today, 818-985-KPFK. I'm happy to say that the phones seem to be working for now, holding out.
So far, so good. Crossing my fingers, too. But yes, if you get disconnected, please do call me back.
Desi, going to that person who said they hate me and then I'm a Biden stooge?
That person has not called back.
Damn it. Call back. one of the points before I get to your calls here, this is one of the reasons why democracy and elections are so important and why we fight for democracy constantly on this program. Arizona's new Democratic Attorney General has put a hold on all executions in the state until the completion of a review of death penalty protocols ordered by the new Democratic governor to the due to the state's history of horrifically mismanaging executions. The review ordered Friday by Governor Katie Hobbs, Arizona's first Democratic governor since 2009, came as the state's new Democratic attorney general, Chris Mays, withdrew her Republican predecessor's request for a warrant to execute a convicted killer who initially asked to be executed, but later backed out of that request. While Hobbs' order did not declare a moratorium on the death penalty yet, keep pushing her, please, Arizonans. Mays will not seek court orders to execute prisoners while this review is underway, according to a spokesperson for the new AG. There are currently 110 prisoners on death row. Arizona has carried out just 3 executions over the past year after a nearly 8-year hiatus that was brought on by criticism of a 2014 execution that was botched and because of difficulties obtaining execution drugs. And botched, I think, is a very nice way to put it. The state's nearly 8-year hiatus on killing people, on the government killing people, came after a 2014 execution in which Joseph Wood was injected with 15 doses of a 2-drug combination over 2 hours, leading the death row prisoner to snort repeatedly and gasp more than 600 times before he finally died. His lawyers said the execution was botched. And more recently, this person that was about to be killed by the state of Arizona, who recently withdrew his request to be killed because he saw what happened previously, described it as torture. Well, what happened in 2014 certainly sounds like torture. Absolutely, it was botched, but it would have been no less horrible, frankly, or morally or ethically justifiable for the government to murder its own prisoners, even if things had gone smoothly, in my opinion. So at least something is going to change for a time right now in Arizona, thanks to the good voters of Arizona who last November elected a Democrat as governor and a Democrat as the attorney general. Let me go to some more of your calls. Mike in Los Angeles. Hey, Mike, welcome to the broadcast, sir.
Oh. Let me caution you.
Yes.
If you're not a great deal more clairvoyant than I suspect, do not say what a majority of Republicans believe. I think you should say instead, say they believe.
Uh-huh.
My experience includes the regular demonstrations we used to have against the Trump administration out there in the same place that mass shooter killed himself yesterday.
Yeah.
And one of these things, I was out there with my Trump mask and an appropriate placard, and this old white woman who was coming out of the bank told me I was disgusting and I should be ashamed of myself, and she seemed to think that Trump had been cleared of the allegations of, connection with Putin and the FSB. And I said, "Did you know the Mueller report? Mm-hmm. Have you read it?" And she said, "Of course."
Yeah,
said,
sure.
"Well, what's section one?"
Yeah,
nothing.
Nothing.
So when they say they believe it, they mean their team should win. That's all they believe.
They're told to believe things. The Republican officials pretend to believe things, and then the Republican supporters are told to believe things, and so they think they believe things, and in fact, they don't even know what it is they believe or don't.
That's true. Trump is a patron saint of phonies and liars.
Yep.
And that applies to a great portion of his followers, just as it did with Richard Nixon.
Thank you for the call, Mike. Good to hear from you, my friend. Happy New Year. 818-985-KPFK is our phone number. Let me go to, speaking of the shooting in Monterey Park, let me go to Ricky in L.A. Hey, Ricky, welcome to the broadcast, sir.
Hey, Brad, how are you?
I'm okay.
Hey, on the shooting aspect, I think the one thing we got to look at versus whether a good guy has a gun or doesn't have a gun.
Can you turn down your radio, Ricky? Ricky, can you turn down your radio? We're having trouble hearing you.
How about right now?
Okay, go ahead.
I can't hear you at all.
You can't hear me. Okay, go ahead.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
I can hear you, Ricky. Go ahead.
Yeah, in regards to whether, you know, the good guy or the bad guy, good guy with a gun, even though a lot of good guys are qualifying to carry guns, they shouldn't be carrying guns. And that's one question that we haven't addressed yet in the state of mind of this shooter is whether or not he legally owned a gun.
Mm.
And that's always something that needs to be addressed is the mental state of individuals, whether it's that young kid in Uvalde mm-hmm. or this gentleman in Monterey Park, because obviously he was disturbed enough to kill himself
mm-hmm.
as LASO's SWAT team was closing in on him.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, it's not the gun so much as it is the individual, but also there's also a whole bunch of other dynamics involved. So if you could speak on what can honestly be done to change people's behavior in wanting to murder, and that's not, you know, you can call it a mass shooting, but it's basically a murder of a huge amount of people.
Ricky, let me ask you a question, Ricky. Why does anyone need to have a semi-automatic rifle, assault weapon, as they call them, or a pistol with a magazine that's got 30 shots? Why do we need to make those available to anyone, these weapons of war?
Well, quite honestly, I don't see it as a weapon of war. As long as you have any kind of a mechanical tool, for lack of a better word, like a gun,
mm-hmm.
you're gonna have individuals who can actually alter them. A good majority of the guns that are recovered out there on the street that are used for violent crimes are guns that are manufactured. They're 3D manufactured ghost guns.
Yeah, but, you know what, Ricky? Let me respond. Let me just respond to that point. I don't want to cut you off. I'll let you come back. But you say a lot of the guns. Some of the guns, many, many millions and millions more, are not 3D printed guns. They're not ghost guns. They're actually bought and sold, perfectly lawfully, legally from a gun shop, from Walmart, anywhere else that would allow this guy in Monterey Park to walk in and in a matter of minutes kill or injure 20 people in just seconds. Why is that sort of, I believe that's a weapon of war. A lot of the military folks I've spoken to also see those weapons as weapons of war, completely unnecessary in civilian society. I'm asking, why are they necessary? Why aren't they just banned like they used to be?
In this particular case in Monterey Park, if I understand correctly, you stated that it was a pistol caliber handgun with an extended magazine.
Right.
Now that would be a regular handgun, okay, that can be purchased by anybody legally, but then could be utilized, a large capacity magazine is utilized in that gun.
Well,
All that aside, what's most important is to think about the mental state of individuals who have access to any type of firearm, whether it be a shotgun,
How do I do that, Ricky? How do we give a mental exam to everyone who wants to buy a gun? And by the way, there was a semi-automatic pistol. It was not a revolver. So it's, you know, boom, 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 boom. You can fire off 20 shots within a matter of seconds. How do I evaluate the mental health? And why should the government be in the business of evaluating the mental health before they sell, before a product is allowed to be sold to someone, Ricky?
Well, it's quite easy. It's not the government. Okay, if we can sit here and utilize the medical system from a young child all the way up to adulthood,
uh-huh.
okay, and use certain capacities of the medical system to determine, you know, and I'm not going to go off on the tangent of sexuality or abortion or anything like that, but enough can be asked of young kids as they're developing. What's your propensity to lash out? And this guy was 72 years old, so we don't know we don't know what happened.
Yeah, but you're suggesting, Ricky, you're suggesting that we check someone's medical records, that those be turned over before they purchase something at Walmart. When I'm asking you, my initial question is, why does anyone need that kind of a weapon? Period. You know, when there was a one of these mass killings, God only knows which one it was. It was maybe a decade or so ago now. And I asked on Twitter and everywhere I could on the air for an example of any time. You know, they used to say, well, because the only way to stop a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun. And I asked to give me one example of where a so-called good guy with a gun needed to have a semi-automatic assault style weapon on them in order to stop a crime. So why are these guns needed at all other than on the field of battle?
Well, they're needed. Well, you can use them for sporting purposes, but that's a whole other issue.
Doesn't sound very sporting to me, Ricky, to go hunting with a pistol with 30 bullets in the magazine. Go ahead.
I tell you what, there's parts of Texas where they go hunt feral hogs that are taking people's livelihoods. Yeah. And they go through 30-round magazines of 5.56 on a regular basis.
Because they're idiots. They could use a regular gun, a regular shotgun, for Christ's sake, Ricky. Come on, man. You know we don't need to use a semi-automatic weapon to go hunting for feral hogs.
Brad, yeah. Brad, I'm not for all kinds of guns for all people. Believe me, I know personally of individuals who have weapons permits that have absolutely no business having weapons permits.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
I'm just asking why we need the guns in the first place. Why don't we ban them? They were banned for 10 years. Why do we even need them, Ricky?
But in this case in Monterey Park, apparently he didn't use a semi-automatic rifle. He didn't use a sporting rifle.
He used a semi-automatic pistol. Why do we need semi-automatic pistols? Yes. Why?
I can't answer that. I toted a gun as law enforcement officer for 20 years. And believe me, not everybody needs to have guns, Brad. I agree with you on that.
Yeah. Not everybody needs to have guns, and nobody needs to have semi-automatic weapons with extended magazines. If you want to get a shotgun or a revolver to protect yourself, okay, not a problem. But these weapons of war are just not needed. Ricky, that said, well, let me give you the closing word, because I enjoy talking to you. I hope you'll call us back. I don't mean to cut you off, but there's a bunch of other folks who want to get in. Ricky?
Not a problem. Thanks, Fred.
Okay. Thank you, Ricky. I do appreciate your call and your thoughts. I really do. 818-985-KPFK. Let me go to Jim in where's all the ladies, by the way? We need some more ladies to call in at 818-985-5735. Maybe if I speak like that, they'll call. Des, is that?
Yeah, I don't think so.
No, what?
We had some, but they had to hang up, or they got hung up on because of our fun phone system. Today.
Was it a woman who said I was a big Biden stooge, corporatist?
Yes,
whatever?
She was one of the people who got disconnected or hung up.
She still hasn't called back.
No,
I'm waiting.
818-985-KPFK.
Did I go to Jim? Jim in LA. Hey, Jim, welcome to the broadcast, sir.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm okay. How are you?
I'm okay, too.
Good, good.
I hate to go back to the Mar-a-Lago stuff, but I was wondering why we care about it. I mean, me as a liberal, I don't care about classified documents.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like something that we shouldn't be being bogged down on. And, you know, like FBI documents have never done anything but hurt the average American and do nothing for them.
Well, that is actually ridiculous and silly. Of course, law enforcement has done things for Americans. Whether you like everything that law enforcement has done is a separate matter. But never mind the classified documents, never mind the FBI documents. These are regular old presidential documents that fall under the Presidential Records Act, are the property of the American people, not of the man or woman who holds the office of president. The case against Donald Trump, in truth, really has nothing to do with classified documents. It has to do with documents that were stolen, that were not returned, obstruction of justice, the rule of law, the Espionage Act, the Presidential Records Act, all of that is important. I believe the rule of law is important, and I believe that people ought to be held accountable when they break the law. And by the way, that includes Joe Biden. And if anyone thinks that the cases are the same, my answer is not to let both Trump and Biden off the hook. It's to charge both of them. If they actually broke the law, charge them. But anyway, that's why I think, Jim. What do you think?
Completely different cases.
So what's that?
No, they're completely different cases, yeah. But I agree with you. My problem is it takes up so much of the media's time. And it takes so much of everybody's time talking about legislation when we should be talking about how to feed people, how to take care of people.
Yeah.
And we're talking about these classified documents that have been stolen by someone who we hate.
Okay. Well, no, I hear you, and the media covers it way too much. We try to not cover it that much. We only cover it when there's something noteworthy to report. Yeah, I wish the corporate media were reporting on things that mattered a lot more. But a president of the United States breaking the law and thumbing his nose at the at law and order, the federal government, the U.S. Constitution, I believe needs to be held accountable or things will get worse. And if you don't believe me, go look at how George W. Bush was let off the hook for his war crimes and how much worse things have gotten since then because nobody held him or Dick Cheney, et cetera, accountable.
You've certainly got a point there. Yeah.
Thanks for your call, Jim. I do appreciate it. 818-985-KPFK. Do we have time to take a quick break here? We'll take a quick break. We'll come back with more of your calls as time allows. 818-985-5735. I'm Brad Friedman. This is The Bradcast.
Five major corporations now own over 80% of all media in the United States, but they don't control us. The Bradcast and the Green News Report are 100% independent, 100% listener-supported. But we can't do it alone. We need you. Your support helps us bring real facts to listeners at independent stations across the country. You can make a real difference by supporting independent media. This country ain't gonna save itself, but we can all do it together. Join us at Bradblog.com/donate. That's Bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Welcome back. It's the Bradcast. I am Brad Friedman from Bradblog.com, taking your calls in our final few minutes today. Hope you will be with us again tomorrow. Big doings going on in Georgia, by the way, at the Fulton County District Attorney's Office and at the Fulton County Court on Tuesday, a hearing on whether the special grand jury report on the apparently massive conspiracy led up by Donald Trump to try to steal the election in 2020 in Georgia. That report has been turned into the court. The special grand jury has asked that it be released to the public. There will be a hearing on Tuesday to decide if it will, in fact, be released. Meanwhile, we wait for DA Fannie Willis to file indictments, or at least go to a regular grand jury to bring indictments against Donald Trump and friends. Jonathan in Santa Monica, welcome to the Bradcast, sir.
Hi. Before I go on, I want to just say that everybody listening, please contribute to KPFK.
Thank you.
I'm calling about Ukraine.
Yeah.
You might want to, I hope you don't cut me off.
If I cut you off, it is only because I'm getting near the top of the hour, Jonathan. So
I'm going to be brief.
Thank you, sir.
This war in Ukraine was totally unnecessary. I won't go into all the things that led up to it, but in 2014, there was an illegal, unconstitutional coup d'etat of President Yanukovych, who was democratically elected twice.
Yep.
The second time, there were international observers, so they couldn't do anything. They had to wait until there was a crisis that was created, I believe, by the State Department and possibly the CIA, because they do this sort of thing. If that had not happened, but even though it happened, there was a Euromaidan protest. There was an opportunity when the president agreed to another election immediately, even though he had 2 years left in his term. But these ultra-nationalist insurrectionists,
yeah,
just like we had on January 6th, they went into the parliament, they purged anybody who supported autonomy for the Donbass Oblast,
yeah,
in eastern Ukraine.
All right, let me, Jonathan, your history is not inaccurate. It is certainly spinning towards one side than the other. That's okay. My point is, let's presume everything, absolutely everything you said, is accurate as you said it. You're saying, therefore, Russia had every right to invade a sovereign neighbor and kill thousands of people. Is that what you're saying, Jonathan?
I'm not saying that.
Okay.
I am absolutely not saying that.
Because
saying
I would have been with you on the concern, and in fact, I have been with you on some of the concerns you talked about in the lead up to the war. And until February 24 of last year, 2022, I would have entertained those concerns. But once this empirical nation of Russia invaded a sovereign, peaceful sovereign neighbor and started committing war crimes, just as the U.S. invaded the sovereign nation of Iraq, I was against the U.S. when I was against the attack when it was the U.S. who did it. I was against the empirical nation when Russia did it.
So
and I think we both need to, well, then that's the end of the story. They can pull out of Ukraine and then we can have the discussion about their complaints concerning what happened in 2014.
Yeah, but you're not even recognizing that this war could have been avoided.
I am. I just said it's not a matter of whether it could have been avoided. Yeah, it could have been avoided. Russia could have avoided it by not invading a sovereign neighbor. Once they did that, they lost all benefit of the doubt. They lost all moral authority, and they should be held accountable. They should get out. They can bring their complaints to the U.S., and that's
that,
it.
Dad.
Okay.
I'm not disagreeing with any of that.
All right.
Okay?
Yep.
This happened 8 years after the coup d'etat. Okay, this coup d'etat was also an illegal invasion. I mean, the United States was...
It was not an illegal invasion.
Okay, just like Russia was
all
supporting
right.
the separatists, okay?
Okay?
Both countries were interfering in the domestic affairs of a sovereign nation. But you're only recognizing that Russia was doing
it. No. Tim, and Jonathan, I got to go. And we can pick this up next week or in any other show. It's a different deal invading a nation. The United States did not invade Ukraine. That's all.
Are being killed.
Okay. Let's talk about it next week. Thank you, Jonathan. I hear you. We'll talk about it next week. I'd love to hear from you. Let me go to Tim because he's been calling back and calling back and calling back. Hey, Tim, welcome to the broadcast. Sorry, I've got like no time to talk to you, but thank you for – we lost him again, didn't we? It's that line number one. I don't know what's wrong with it. Let's go to Caroline or something in L.A. Caroline, real quick. We got you?
Hi. Oh, yeah, I was going to talk about documents, but now I have to say just one thing about Ukraine, is that, you know, that president was not elected democratically. Those were corrupt elections. They were, you know, he was put in there by Putin, and democratically elected was Zelensky. I just wanted to make that point.
Okay.
Anyway, I was going to talk about the documents. A similar thing happened to me that happened to Biden. Someone moved my documents into an area where they weren't supposed to be. Now, I got a violation, and I thought that was pretty unfair because I wasn't the one who moved them, you know. But I still got a violation fixed, and so I can see where they might want to give him a violation. But it's a hand slap, you know. It's not a big deal. Like, what I think we need to keep getting out there is the message that Trump took those documents, and we can't prove it. So there's, you know, I know we can't prove it, but I hope someday we can.
I think we can prove it, Caroline, and I got to get out, and I am sorry because I'd love to hear more about your documents and the ones you stole, you thief. Thank you for calling in, Caroline. I appreciate it. Actually, stick around on the line, and I'll get more information from you on that. I got to get out, though. My thanks to all of our callers, ones I couldn't get to, ones that dropped, etc. My thanks to our producer, Desi Doyen, to my board operator, Gary Baca. It wasn't his fault for a change, and to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's program, download it anytime for free at bradblog.com. Drop me email. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. On the Facebooks, the Twitters, and the Mastodons, I am The Brad Blog. We'll see you there. Till we see you here, hopefully tomorrow, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.